Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und willkommen zu Gegenpressing, der Bundesliga-Podcast. I'm Manu Feit, hier ist Stefan Bienkowski. And also joining us today is Sepp Stafford-Bloor from The Athletic. Guests first, Sepp, how's it going? Good to have you back.
It's going well, man. It's nice to be back. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. You've been on so frequently this season. I feel like we're almost abusing your time at this stage, but it's always great to have you on. I'm really looking forward. We have lots of great things to talk about today. So, really looking forward to have you back on the show. And then, of course, Stefan, how's it going? How's your weekend been?
Yeah, very, very well. Was that The Athletic or The Athletic?
Can be both. We're a broad church.
I'm pretty sure there's an American and an English version. Yeah, there's American and an English version, right?
I like the idea that The more time Seb spends in Germany, it just slowly, like, naturally evolves into The Athletic.
The Athletic. The Athletic.
Like, you know, this is the umbrella under which our Bundesliga coverage comes. It's The Athletic. Or maybe probably Das Athletic, really.
Maybe The Athletic. It'd be
really, really helpful if you could just stick The Athletic in the URL band and it just filtered for everything Bundesliga. That'd be really if you could run that up the flagpole, that'd be really helpful, Seb.
I think you might be overestimating how much influence I have over anything that matters. But okay. I can certainly say it out loud and see if anything happens.
I'm actually really struggling which article to put in front of this. It's kind of an odd one. I know it would be Das New York Times, so there you go.
I think it would be Das Athletic. Not to correct your German grammar, but...
I'm not 100% sure.
This is why we are not sponsored by Duolingo. Anyway, shall we get on with the show, perhaps? You can have a think about it, Mario, while you're doing the ad read.
I was thinking I'm going to have a think about it during the ad read, so let's do that. This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. The holiday season is off and rolling, with NFL in full stride and the NBA and NHL hitting mid-season form. BetOnline is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info. With up-to-the-minute sports wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions, BetOnline is the top spot for everything pro and amateur sports. And not just the big four. BetOnline has info available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access at any time for almost any sport that is played, from MMA to international soccer. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E AVBELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, guys. Well, the Friday fixture. We can probably just talk 30 seconds about that because I watched this game with a bunch of friends in Seattle who don't have much contact with the Bundesliga, and I was definitely ashamed. You know what the issue was with me for this game is that obviously everyone expected Bayern Munich to win this game. And Harry Kane, of course, produced the goods, as he so often does, right? But I don't know how you guys felt about this, but this Köln performance, especially in the last 10, 15 minutes, they made it way too easy in many ways for Bayern Munich. I understand that Bayern Munich are very good and all that, right? But if you're only down by a goal, you should probably throw everything but the kitchen sink at them, right? Just to try to get a point. Because, like, who cares in the end of the day if you lose 2-0 or 3-0? A 1-0 with just 10 minutes to go, that should be an invitation for you to at least try. And I don't know, Stefan, how you felt about this, but I just thought this Köln performance, there was just no urgency at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that tends to happen fair bit in the Bundesliga, and it's something that we talk a lot about, you know, whether it's Bochum or Darmstadt against Bayern, and yeah, maybe you can add Cologne to this. I mean, these are obviously teams that are all struggling for relegation. Perhaps they feel like they have to pick their battles. And you could also kind of flip this on its head and say, how many times do we sit on this show and talk about teams that, you know, had picked up a point against Bayern or a heroic victory against Bayern 1 week, and then they go on and lose four games in a row because they're absolutely shattered. So I think a pragmatic head coach maybe looks at the fixture list and thinks, well, when Bayern comes to town, maybe we don't throw everything at it. We just accept that's defeat and we move on. Anything we can get from is a bonus. And I know that kind of feeds straight into the whole kind of Farmers League nonsense that people throw at German football, and that Bayern do kind of walk these things. But it was a tricky game for Cologne. There's no kind of right way, I guess, to kind of go about it. We obviously had Matt at the game. He wrote a great write-up afterwards, and he actually kind of praised the goalkeeper, Marvin Schwaber, for the amount of saves he made over the course of the match. So, you know, you could maybe argue that any other day it's, you know, it's a 2-3-0 win for Bayern, but yeah, it's kind of been the nature of Cologne this season. I can't remember the last time I watched one of their performances and was inspired by them.
Yeah, so what do you think here?
I think it worried me, Manu. Like, I agree with the point about energy conservation completely, because that's the way of German football, especially if you're in Cologne's situation now, right? You've got to kind of target the winnable fixtures, but at the same time, you're coming off the international break. Strategically, you have 2 weeks to prepare, even if that's not physically true. And I think it's a little bit concerned. I expected Bayern to win like everybody else, but I thought they'd get rattled a little bit. And to me, I was having a conversation with someone else about this morning. It feels like Colin and Bamgard are approaching a kind of Union Urs Fischer situation. It doesn't feel right at the moment. And I think Bayern played very well. I was also, some people have said that they took their foot off the gas. And I think offensively that's true, but I also think they showed pretty decent control, which behind some of their results and performances has been a little bit lacking at times, especially in the sort of the first half of the first half of the season, if that makes sense. They looked very vulnerable. They didn't really control the ball. I mean, when they had possession, they always seemed a little bit fragile whenever they lost it. And that wasn't true here, so that was kind of impressive. But it was, yeah, I expect a little bit more spirit in response. I thought they would be, I thought they would have to take a few more punches than they did. I think that's probably the way to put it.
Bayern's
a bit concerned.
Bayern's XG was 3.12 and Köln's 0.45. So Schwebe was very good. I did note that as well. He made several key saves. I think Köln's match plan to keep it tight worked really well. But you know what really, really bothers me is that you don't try more. And they did show it in the last, I think, 5 or 6 minutes. You know, they started pushing. They're like, hey, we want to go down here. Maybe we should try. But Steffen Baumgart, there were several moments on the sideline where they would focus in on him. And you could tell that he was not pleased. That the energy that he was displaying on the side of the field, right? That he was there in t-shirt. He's got a t-shirt, just with a t-shirt and like his unusual hat. And like, you could see the steam coming off him. That's how hot he's running, right? And I think when you're him, you must be just, for the lack of better terms, pissed about the way he expends his energy and you just don't see it translate on the field. And you know, Stefan, Sepp makes a really good point here. Like, when does Köln come to the point where they say, yeah, like Baumgart is an amazing coach, he has all this energy and he fits perfectly to the club, but the message just doesn't translate anymore?
It's really interesting because I was speaking to someone recently about Cologne, and you know, we were discussing you know, the concept of sleeping giants in German football and how you know, so many clubs in Germany seem to be kind of bogged or kind of held down by, you know, you don't want to use the old stereotype about German bureaucracy, because I don't think it's bureaucracy. It's more like they're kind of held down by this idea that it's almost like there's so much community, there's so much kind of fan culture around the club that sometimes these things kind of get cemented in, and before they know it, they're part of the foundations. And you know, it's actually one of the criticisms of 50 plus one that because these the people who end up running these clubs are democratically elected, in a roundabout way, they actually change positions far less often than you would find in clubs in Spain or England. And, you know, we were having a discussion about Cologne because I think you can make a pretty strong argument that Cologne are obviously a club in you know, in one of Germany's biggest cities, not just the city of Cologne itself, but the metropolitan area. And, you know, you take a 20-mile radius of Cologne and there's about 40 million people there. And you've got this club that just kind of bubbles around the bottom of the league, even though it's got one of the biggest population centres in the world around it, or at least in Europe. And the conclusion that was kind of drawn to me was that because of things like 50 plus one and because of the nature of Cologne as a city, it's very much a kind of culture of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And there's not really this
there's
kind of idea.
There's a term for that, Stefan. Do you know what it is?
Does it start with a C?
No, it's the Kölner Klüngel.
Oh, right. Okay, I was thinking of an English word. Well, yeah, and you know, sometimes that's a good thing. And, you know, Cologne obviously have a very good kind of... The city of Cologne is very proud of the club and they have a great fan culture. And, you know, I think they do a lot of good there. But there's that kind of sense sometimes when you kind of start poking around Cologne, you realize that nothing really changes and there's not a huge emphasis to change things. And is that something that's led to Baumgart staying in the job perhaps longer than he should have? Maybe, I don't know. If they could bring in someone better, I'm not quite sure. But there's a malaise, maybe is the best word I can use, that's been hanging over Cologne for some time now. And I don't think it's just because of the head coach or just because of the sporting director or whatever else. I think it's a cultural thing, to be perfectly honest with you, at the club.
I think so. I think it goes much deeper than Steffen Baumgart. I think he's actually probably one of the good things at the club there, to be honest with you. I think it goes higher up the ladder. And Baumgart is not from Köln, right? I think he's from Rostock. He's from East Germany. Anyways, so like he wouldn't really be involved in the Kölner Klüngel is essentially, you know, to give you a rough Bavarian translation, we call it the Rhineland Mafia, which is the Rhineland Mafia, right? So like it's essentially a group of Cologne business people that control everything. But you know, like there is a lot of that to be said, that Cologne doesn't really allow a lot of outside influences or likes to keep control, or they like to do it their own way, which isn't the best way often. And that is a difficult place to operate from, right?
Yeah. Mario, could I jump in quickly before we move on to their games and just briefly go back to Harry Kane for a second? Because I actually did some math after the game on Friday. I was working on Saturday, and I actually decided to sit down and figure out how many goals he'll end up scoring at the end of the season.
gazillion.
Would you like to know? So here's how I did the math, and actually it's good to have Seb on the show here, because so he can check my numbers here based on his Tottenham time at Tottenham. So at this current moment in time, he's scoring 1.54 league goals per 90 minutes, which is higher than anything he achieved in the Premier League. And if you kind of extrapolate that out for the rest of the season, it obviously gives you a good number, a big number. But of course, we have to factor in games that he'll be out injured for. Interestingly enough, he's actually got a pretty good injury record at Tottenham. He's on average over the last nine seasons, he's only missed four league goals per season. So once we factor all that in, look at his current average, and if he were to keep this average for the rest of the season, he'd finish the campaign on 46 league goals.
That's close.
In the Bundesliga, which is obviously more than the 41 goals that Lewandowski scored to break the record, which is just obviously bonkers. And probably, certainly won't be the case. But if anyone's wondering what kind of average you'll have to maintain from here to the end of the season to beat Lewandowski's record, it is 1.34 goals per 90, which honestly is a number that I think even Lionel Messi would blush at. So, I mean, I'd be interested to see if he can. I'd be amazed if he can, but that's the kind of numbers we're talking about right now.
He needs to stay fit, right? To get there? Or did you factor in the average of four games he's going to miss?
Yeah, that's factoring his four injuries that are set to, that could happen between now and the end of the season. Based
and then
on
rest as well. He's going to get rest at some point.
Well, if he's chasing that record, he might not want any.
Yeah, the other thing that you need to factor in too is that I think sooner or later Bundesliga defenses are going to queue in. Right? Yeah. I mean, you saw the same thing with Haaland, who went on this berserk run at the very start. And his clip is still incredible. I mean, you just did a piece on that on Transfermarkt, right? I think it's 1.13 for Haaland, right, at the moment? Which is like
in England.
At the moment, right? Which is still incredible. But it is significantly down from what it was at the start. I think sooner or later, defensive units will cue in. Kane is probably still going to score more than a goal a game on average. But, you know, I think the average will come down. What do you think, Seb?
Yeah, I think it's also that one of the hidden factors here is Leroy Sané's form. Just because Sané has been so destructive. And whilst there is the partnership between the two of them is quite embryonic and the chemistry is quite basic and the moves between them are quite basic, I think from a defensive standpoint, the proposition that Bayern give you is just so much more difficult to face when Sané is playing well. Like, factor in Musiala and how he benefits from the way the ball is carried or where, you know, Kane drops into midfield. You start adding in performances of players like Gnabry as well, maybe Thomas Müller later in the season. I mean, that's kind of what a useful player to have. So I think Kane needs all of these things to align. I don't think it's also that injury statistic. So his record over the past couple of years has been very good, and that's probably brought that average down a little bit, because there was a run, I believe it was between about 2016 and 2019, where he was on one semi-serious ankle injury each season. And what happens with Kane is he has the injury, he recovers from the injury, he gets back on the pitch, but then once he's playing, he takes between about 5 or 10 games to regain his fluidity. He's one of those players historically. So I think his durability is fine. I just think, it's going to depend upon what Bayern do in January. Like, for instance, if they go through January and they don't add to their midfield, if for instance they don't go back in for Palinha and solve that number six issue, and more importantly, just shut the narrative up a little bit around that, then I think it's going to be kind of unhelpful just generally from a team perspective. So we'll see. But I honestly think he'll do it. I think he'll do it quite easily, actually, because not to denigrate the fantastic goal scorer that Robert Lewandowski was, I just think Harry Kane's a much better footballer. I think he's Lewandowski's equal as a finisher, but as an all-round player, there's no contest, really.
I don't agree with that.
Ooh, edgy. Okay, let's have it out.
I think top Lewandowski was incredible. Like, from a ball-controlling perspective, and he's faster. And I think there is that statistic is out there that Lewandowski was a much faster player. I think prime Lewandowski, maybe Harry Kane is still going to hit it because Lewandowski is 4 years older, right? Yeah, and Lewandowski didn't really hit it until he was 31-ish. But prime Lewandowski as a footballer, he could do things from an athletic perspective that were just unreal.
Manny, think of it as a component in your side, right? And
totally.
I'm not saying wrong. This is the prism through which I'm viewing it. In terms of not what he's able to do physically necessarily, but what he means to your team and the kind of the butterfly effect of his contribution. I don't see a world in which I would ever take Lewandowski over Kane.
That's a very different argument.
Maybe I expressed it wrong in the first place.
I can get on board with that. I think that Kane is a better team player.
I think he allows your team to do more. That's the thing.
If you phrase it that way, then that's a completely different argument, right? I just think from an athletic footballing perspective, I think that Lewandowski is the more talented. And
I don't agree with.
He could do things that just they were Zlatan-esque, you know? And when you see it live, it's just Robert did what now? And Kane is so much more effective, but his actual footballing skills are more basic, but his basic skills are at such a high level that it just is very effective.
The different types of players though, aren't they? I mean, Lewandowski was a pure number nine, whereas Kane's maybe something between a 9 and a 10 now, and that's kind of where he's kind of stepped up to be a world-class player, I think, in the sense that he can kind of drop back, and that's obviously allowed Bayern to have guys like Leroy Sané playing directly off him, which is something that Bayern just couldn't do with Lewandowski, to the extent that more or less by the time he'd left, you had other forwards in the team complaining about how they had to be the players that set up the goals for Lewandowski rather than being able to combine with him for him to set them up, much like Kane now does for those players. But it's obviously an entirely hypothetical. And, you know, I think when I think about what both players bring to a team, I'd say their finishing's probably about equal. But in terms of actual presence in the box, I actually think probably Lewandowski has more physicality. Seb, you've watched Kane a lot more than I have, so correct if I'm wrong here, but I don't see central defenders bouncing off him the same way they did with Lewandowski. And you know, you could argue whether that's important or not, I guess, depending on your team and your tactics, but look, they're different players with different attributes.
I think that Kane is more likely to make your team better than Lewandowski, if that makes sense. So, but that goes into impact and not pure talent.
I wonder if
it's hard to measure. Very hard to measure, I guess.
It's really hard to measure. Stefan's point's an interesting one about the kind of the physicality. And I, thinking out loud, I wonder is whether because as he's got older, when Kane emerged, there was still that kind of number 10 aspect to him. But he's become, I think he's become less confrontational in the box in terms of sort of challenging batters, doing, you know, traditional number 9 stuff in the penalty area. And so you don't see him in those kind of contests as regularly as you probably did with Lewandowski. I also think, and this is something I got wrong for a really long time in England, but I think when he came through, I was quite guilty of looking at him as, judging him kind of on the basis of his aesthetic rather than actually what he was doing with the ball. So he would do things.
I made
things,
that mistake. I was definitely guilty of that too. I think we all do it though.
I think it's kind of, you're always prisoner to what you've seen in the previous generation, right? And then when someone comes along, you're looking for what they can't do or what they can do, and you're judging them on the way they move. And Kane is probably the best example I know of someone who looks like a much worse footballer than he really is, just because of his body shape, the way he addresses the ball, also the way he runs. He's always looked very clunky. Because sometimes you can watch him and you think you're watching Jan Koller, right?
Well, Kane is a big guy. Like,
Yes, he is.
He's kind of like built like me. You know, for reference, like, you know me. Like, he's a big guy. Yeah, he's a big guy.
Big Bavarian man.
And he doesn't have that. But like, that's the difference between Lewandowski. I think they're almost the same height. But Lewandowski is very thin and athletic, right?
He's quite willowy, isn't he? Yeah.
And so he also, that's why Kane doesn't have that speed, right? And also, I think, why he drops so deep and tries to be effective that way, because he simply doesn't have the same athletic ability to be as quick as Lewandowski. And I think the injury history plays a role here too. Lewandowski is hard to break, right? Like, he doesn't have injuries ever. So like, he does have that ability to be just a little bit more willowy, I guess, more, you know, fluid. So yeah, it's a really interesting debate.
Guys, we said
that
we were going
not
to
expect to have on the show.
We said we were going to spend 60 seconds talking about the Bayern game, and we're now 25
it's
minutes into this
been
podcast.
3 hours.
I think people will appreciate this debate. Hey, oh, by the way, yeah, before we move on to Dortmund, what do you guys think? Just leave it in the comment section. Kane or Lewandowski? And then maybe we'll make a bigger show about this, because I think this is fascinating. But we do need to talk about...
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dortmund. This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. The holiday season is off and rolling, with NFL in full stride and the NBA and NHL hitting mid-season form. BetOnline is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info. With up-to-the-minute sports wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions, BetOnline is the top spot for everything pro and amateur sports. And not just the big four. BetOnline has info available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access at any time for almost any sport that is played, from MMA to international soccer. Head to Bet Online today, and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Their comeback victory against Gladbach, it looked terrible to start the game with. Sepp, I think you were there, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was...
What happened? How did we go from 2-0 disaster to 3-2 at halftime?
Well, I think, in order, we got to 2-0 because Dortmund were ludicrously passive. If you look at both goals, two really good goals, lovely run by Rocker Reitz, good ball from Alisson Player. Similarly, really nice bit of technical football from Kone for the second goal. But come on, like, how many touches are you going to allow a player in the penalty box without actually making a challenge? And so they kind of, Dortmund found themselves in a, it wasn't that Dortmund did anything wrong, it was that Dortmund didn't do anything. for that first sort of 20 minutes, and they just found themselves 2-0 down. And then actually, to be honest with you, it's kind of the same old story, because if you look at their comeback, certainly the first two goals of it, it is typical of BVB under Terzic, which is your moments come from individual expression, right? So the Sabitzer goal is really nice bit of skill from Julian Brandt. Really nice bit of skill. Like, that's just classic Brandt, the way he goes past the player and it stands up to the far post. And the second goal is, hey, this is an interesting question for both of you, actually, because I didn't know that Niklas Füllkrug had that finish in his locker. I'm not going to interrupt your flow, your propaganda, but okay.
I'm a big Niklas Füllkrug fan. I think the Niklas Füllkrug is really unlucky that his skill set as a number nine was basically not in demand in the Bundesliga over the last 10 years. Stefan knows this. I've made this argument before. What would Füllkrug be as a player if his type of a footballer would have actually been in demand maybe 5 or 6 years earlier? The reason why Füllkrug's career started so late in the Bundesliga, or he got time, clubs actually spent time trying to develop him, is because Bundesliga clubs didn't play with players like him.
Yeah. I mean, I can agree with Seb to an extent. Like, I thought the finish was delightful. Especially at that moment in a game, I think it just sums up how absolutely incredible. It's not even just the goal itself, it sums up how incredibly, like, stunning football can be at times, where in the midst of all this chaos, in the midst of this like gut-wrenching battle between two teams just throwing everything at the wall, let's be honest, he's an absolute brute of a player. Okay, like, I don't mean in a derogatory term, I mean like in terms of the way he plays.
He's a bull of a forward, right?
Bull's a better word for it. This deft touch just was out with the outside of the foot, and he just kind of lifts it. It was an absolutely incredible goal. So the finesse was incredible.
He knows where the goalkeeper is, Stefan. So, like, you get the knockdown from Beiner Gittens. And I didn't really appreciate this until I saw the replay, which is kind of a measure of it because it all happened so quickly. Beiner Gittens with a knockdown. Like, Füllkrug, for like amateur hopeless players like us. So you read the knockdown from your teammate, and in your peripheral vision, you see where the goalkeeper, where Niklas is and what he's not covering. And you have the presence of mind to produce that finish. That's a brilliant bit of football.
Can we talk about the knockdown as well? I don't think I've seen a single Dortmund player do that this season. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, in the comments, but that felt very un-Dortmundly. Because we're talking about a team here who have actually really struggled to create goals this season. And they've had, I mean, Terzic has played probably 10 or 12 different combinations of wide players this season. And all of a sudden, they go route one, Bino Gittens, who, let's be honest, isn't really known as a target man of sorts, shall we say. And he just kind of chests the ball into the path of the striker to volley at home. Very un-Dortmundy. But yeah, what a goal.
But that's a frustrating thing about Dortmund, because let's be honest, we all know they can do this and they just don't do it often enough.
Yeah. I'll tell you how bad I thought Dortmund started off. I thought after 20 minutes, I was seriously thinking, are they going to sack him after this game? I'm not saying that to be dramatic, because I thought the manner in which they lost those two games before the international break and the discussions that have been going on behind closed doors and in the public around Dortmund right now, in terms of, you know,
the
players,
fact that it's public, Stefan, which I think that is the really worrisome part.
Well, yeah, there's all this stuff about how Sebastian Kehl and Terzic don't get on in terms of transfers, and how Kehl and Vatska's trying to put Kehl in a box and get him to kind of follow the company line and things. Then you have players going off on international duty saying, oh, well, it's such a joy to play this type of football with my national team because I don't get to do this with Dortmund. And then, you know, and Terzic gives his press conference and says, you know, we've all worked very hard and during the international break to make up for mistakes, and, you know, fans are going to see something different, and, you know, we promise this is going to be a lot better. And then 20 minutes in, Kone is just walking through that Dortmund box as if there's nobody there, firing home a goal, and it's as if nothing has changed. And at that point, you know, I did seriously think, well, what else can Dortmund do here except sack the head coach? Because they're already at the title race, and at this rate, they won't even be pushing for top four. Now, I mean, maybe I'm being cynical here. I don't actually think the four goals that preceded those two goals makes a huge amount of difference, because the manner in which they conceded those two goals is the thing that continues to hold this team back, rather than the four goals that were scored. Well,
I'm glad you're saying that, because it's been this thought forward, right? If they play like this against Milan on Tuesday, which is the big game, which will define a big part of the rest of the season, because bottom line is they beat Milan, they're through to the next round of the Champions League, right? They don't beat Milan, or they lose that game, they have to basically beat PSG on the final match day of the group stage. So there's a lot at stake. But guys, like Stefan, because you already have this narrative in your head, a performance like the one against Gladbach, you go down 2-0 against Milan, that's game over.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm aware that Seb hasn't said anything for a few minutes, so I'll be brief here and let Seb jump in. But I'm not sure how much actually rests on the Champions League result, because Dortmund in recent years just don't seem to... And I think it's a detriment to their lack of ambition as a club, to be perfectly honest, but they don't seem to get that hot and bothered about missing out on the Champions League and the targets that should be set for themselves as a club. So, for example, I just don't think they're going to turn around and sack Terzic if he doesn't make it to the last 16, I'll put it that way. But even if they, maybe they should. But my issue, and I guess this is where the frustration is born out of, is that I feel like Dortmund and Vasca are so desperate to make Terzic the next Jurgen Klopp, and you can see why they think that, because he's a very likable guy, he's all smiles, you know, I know Klopp technically wasn't, you know, Dortmund through and through, but he made himself Dortmund through and through very quickly by, you know, becoming a fan favourite, and Terzic obviously has a lot of stock with the fans.
Stefan Klopp grew up a Dortmund fan.
Well, yeah, but, okay, fine, but I mean, I guess the point I was making was he came from Mainz initially, but sure. Either way, you know, that's what he had all that on his side, and you can see why the Dortmund board look at Terzic and think, you know, tick, 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 he ticks all those boxes. The fundamental difference is that Klopp had a very clear tactical plan for how to win games, yeah. and he stuck to that plan. And the issue I have with Terzic is that he has no tactics. It's, you know, we talk about this all the time, but this is now what, our third season we've watched Terzic play as Dortmund head coach, and I still couldn't tell you what his favourite formation or tactics are. And I think that's the fundamental flaw with him as this Dortmund coach. They don't seem to have a plan A, a plan B, or even a plan C.
You know, Seb, just to colour you in here before you jump in, we had this question at the Q&A part last week, and Stefan and I really struggled to answer it. The question was, what's Edin Terzic's playing style? I don't think we could answer it. Seb, are you any smarter than us?
No, definitely not. But then I think maybe the question is wrong. I think the reason we ask what Edin Terzic's playing style is because of where he's coaching. So the context, obviously, any Dortmund manager exists in is right, system-based football, you're going to win games through your system rather than necessarily through your individuals. Or at the very least, your system is going to make and embolden individual players. Whereas I've always thought sort of Terzic's success depends upon putting his individual players in position to win games, or like giving them the license to go and do that, whether that, and over time, it feels like that's become less and less sensible because the individual players aren't as good. Like, there is no Bellingham, there is no Haaland, there is no Sancho. I know Man United fans will laugh at that, but Sancho is terrific in the Bundesliga, and I won't hear otherwise. And you look at that side now, Brandt, okay, maybe. But you don't have that caliber of individual player at the moment. And also, you know, I think if we're going to criticize Terzic, then I think there are a couple of individual players there who also need to... is sharing the accountability. I thought Mats Hummels on Saturday was it's the typical Hummels ratio. He does enough technical stuff to be impressive, and then some of the fundamental stuff is less impressive, or, you know, there's a lot of shouting and pointing and you know, being demonstrative, and there's the occasional nice sidestep through a pressing line, and then, you know, a 15-yard pass that goes straight out the touchline. It's not quite of the right standard. And Hummels is by no means the worst defender. We just notice him because he plays for Germany. I'm not entirely convinced that Ryerson is good enough for this level. Like if we're saying that the bar for Dortmund is to compete with Bayern every year and to go to the latter stage of the Champions League, Ryerson, I don't know. Özcan, don't know. Emre Can, on a good day, sure, fine. I don't know that Donny Marlon is. I think he's a very nice sort of 7 out of 10 player. I don't see him having the ceiling of someone like an Adeyemi, for instance. I think Bynoe Gissens probably has a bit more potential too, if he can stay fit. Haller, Füllkrug, it's not like the ingredients aren't the very best. I don't think it's not as interesting a squad as Terzic could possibly have, and I think it just doesn't suit him. And this is the great irony, because I think you're both right. I think Dortmund desperately want him to be the guy.
Okay, let's do something hypothetical here then, right? Dortmund could have signed a lot of the guys that ended up at Leverkusen, right? Whether it's Boniface or Grimaldo, they were both, and Xhaka as well. Three guys that could have ended up on the Leverkusen squad. Do you think Terzic would get the same amount out of these three guys than Xabi Alonso? You can both answer it, but Seb, I interrupted you, so you can go first. But I personally can't see it. But what do you think?
Well, then narrow it down to Xhaka, because I spoke to Xhaka just after he signed for Leverkusen, and it really struck me the reverence with which he spoke about Alonso. And I don't know this, but it just seems unlikely that he would have the same level of admiration and as a result, the same level of buy-in for Edin Terzic. So I'm going to say no, I don't think so. I think there would have been an uplift. I think, for instance, I think Hoffman would have been an excellent BVB player, because Hoffman is an excellent footballer, but obviously he's harder to go from Gladbach to Dortmund. No, I don't think so. I think they all went to the right place for their careers.
Do you know the difference between Leverkusen and Dortmund there, specifically with Xhaka, is that and I agree, I actually spoke to Xhaka too recently, and when you ask him why he moved there, he'll happily spend 10 minutes talking to you about the intricacies of what Xabi Alonso asked him to do every game. He's working with a very, very talented tactician there, and Terzic simply isn't that. And you can argue about how many of these average players are playing below par till the cows come home, but at the end of the day, there's one common factor in all that, and that's the head coach is trying to get a song out of them. I was kind of nodding along, Seb, as you were talking about the players who you've wondered weren't good enough, and I'll go one better and say I'm beginning to wonder whether Nico Schlotterbeck is even good enough to play for Dortmund. We were discussing this in the subscriber chat during the game, and people were saying, another kind of hiccup from Schlotterbeck there for the first goal.
I think Nico Schlotterbeck would be a different player with Alonso, Stefan.
Well, possibly. Yeah, possibly.
Look at Jonathan Tah. That's a great example.
But then Schlotterbeck then goes to the German national team and he still looks like Bambi on ice. So,
yeah, but it's your club form it's so hard to shake your club form when you're in a national team.
I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but it happens over and over and over again. And where Dortmund were hoping that they could sign a young, talented player who could inspire the team, more often than not, the rest of that defence are actually having to compensate for his mistakes week in, week out. And it's not a team that can compensate for mistakes, because everyone else in that team's also making mistakes. So at the end of the day, yeah, you could bring a head coach in, a better head coach, and they probably could make a lot of these players play a lot better. But maybe it's a case of...
I quite like Schlotterbeck, Stefan. I'm surprised there. Like, I completely agree with your kind of summary of his form. I just don't... When you see him play at his best, you think, right, that player exists, okay? So, and the Jonathan Tah example is a good one, because it's about, like, you need to put the right bits around him. Like, I remember... Do you guys remember the Germany documentary on Amazon, where they're picking through the bones of the Japan game at the World Cup, and Flick turns to him and says something like, Schlotti, was machst du? And it's like, no, you put the player in this position to fail, And it's your place here to give him the instruction that he needs, the coaching to kind of fulfill his potential. And I feel he's in that category. I love watching him play. Like, sometimes I wince watching him play, like we all do, but there's something there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is just that there's just so many mistakes in his game, and it's the kind of fundamental defensive stuff that, again, maybe a good head coach can maybe iron out, but I do kind of wonder if he's kind of been fast-tracked as an impressive young defender because of his technical ability, because of his attacking ability, rather than because he's actually a solid defender. And in some ways, maybe the wool's been pulled over our eyes to an extent here because every time he can go three or four games with mistakes, but hey, wow, did you see that 40-yard goal he scored? Or that cross-field pass?
But he's 23. He's only 23. And I think centre-backs just need more time to mature. And
he doesn't have any time because he's starting for Dortmund in Germany, so exactly. He has to be ready.
But then he needs to be put in a place where he has the ability to mature, and there needs to be pieces put around him that can give him the ability to be playing at a level that he needs, to be in a comfort zone where he can develop. And you know what? I was in Seattle this weekend, right, with two of my friends who are huge Man United fans, so I had to watch a Man United game this weekend. And we were talking about how Man United sign good players and they get worse. And I call it the Man United syndrome, right? Because all these pieces that they sign, they're all fundamentally good players, whether it's Sancho, Onana, all these guys, right? And then they get worse. Borussia Dortmund have the Man United syndrome. They sign players and they get worse. You can make an argument maybe that some of them, Benzemaini, for example, weren't maybe good signings to begin with. Nico Schlotterberg, fundamentally a really good signing. Daniel Malen, I thought, really good signing at the time. Took forever for him to get used to this, to Dortmund. Karim Adeyemi. Everyone in Germany wanted Karim Adeyemi. Goes to Dortmund. He hasn't been the player that anyone expected to be, including professional scouts and head coaches. So why do players get worse at Dortmund? Why are they not able, rather than, right, when you look at your potential, there's a bottom and there's a top. And players that go to Dortmund with like a range and potential are more likely at the moment to hit the bottom rather than the top. And why is that? That's because the surroundings and the environment that they are being placed in is just not good enough for them to reach that level of potential that they can all fundamentally play at. Is that a harsh criticism on my part, or what do you guys think?
Feel free to jump in there. I think Seb answered the question already. It's the coach, or maybe it's the players that have been signed.
Well, I would say it's both, because it's like, if you're, there's two problems, right? Is that Adeyemi's a great example, Manny, because I was like, I thought Adeyemi would already be a superstar. I thought he was a fantastic player when I watched him play in Austria. Like when he kind of periodically drop onto the Champions League radar, you just thought, God, this guy's going to be something. Now, if a player doesn't succeed, or if a player doesn't kind of evolve in the way that you think, it's the wrong player being treated in the wrong way, and they're both factors, aren't they? Like you need to have your talent ID needs to be aligned with whatever your coaching staff will intend to do. So it feels weird, and it implies that there's something wrong systemically within the club in terms of...
And he was a Rose signing too, right? Adeyemi was signed and Rose was still in charge.
Well, I actually did a whole newsletter on why Adeyemi doesn't work, and I basically came to the conclusion that he's played in the wrong position, he's played in the wrong system, Terzic doesn't really seem to know what to do with him. In my opinion, Adeyemi's a second striker. He's not a winger, or maybe you can play him as an inside forward, or better yet, even a number nine. But he's a player who has to play off of other players. And, Adeyemi or Terzic tends to play him as a winger and asks him to hug the touchline, where he's completely useless. And it almost boils down to that kind of Sunday league mentality. Like, oh, well, that guy's fast. Stick him on the wing and see if he can run past the fullback and swing a ball in. Which is just not anything that Adeyemi has ever done. And actually, that's funny you bring up, both of you bring up Man United and Sancho, because I actually think that's the fundamental issue with Sancho at Man United too, where he's been asked to play as a winger when he's actually an inside forward. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day in a different podcast. But yeah, to bring this back
to the podcast series, that issue, I would say, rather than just a single podcast.
We're going deep. We're going deep today. It's great.
Yeah. Deep without really probably answering any of the questions, but it's fun all the same. But yeah, I mean, weirdly enough, they now go into a game against Milan, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, are missing Rafael Leao through injury or maybe suspension. I can't remember. I think it's injury. And, you know, we've talked to this before, Manu, in the show, where, you know, if we all agree that Terzic maybe doesn't have a rule book, shall we say, that he follows, or doesn't take a proactive approach to tactics, to his credit, he has looked more comfortable in the Champions League because he's just accepted that Dortmund are playing bigger teams or richer teams and that they have to set up defensively to try and combat that. And it's not looked pretty. It's looked very boring. And against PSG, it was positively dull and turgid to watch, but has allowed them to pick up decent results, particularly against Newcastle. And they didn't look terrible against Milan in the first leg. So in a kind of paradoxical way, we could sit here for half an hour saying how bad Dortmund have been, but I wouldn't actually be surprised if they beat Milan this week.
Well, they tend to do that, right? Like in the Champions League, I didn't think going into Champions League season that Dortmund will not qualify out of the group, but you know, many did. And I understand why, because this is a really difficult group. But, you know, I think we were all surprised of what they did against Newcastle twice. Especially going in with the form that they had, right? So they tended to surprise us when we suspected the least. Like, when they lost to Bayern, and then I said to you, Seb, now they're going to go and beat Newcastle. And that's exactly what they did. Which is so weird. This Newcastle game is going to be really interesting. And Leao was out because of an injury, Stefan. I just checked it. Was suspected to be out, or likely to be out, I guess is the actual wording. Interestingly enough, if Dortmund beat Milan and PSG beat Newcastle, that group is done. Which is wild. But yeah, I guess because this is a bit of a preview, then what do we expect? I think that Dortmund are going to sneak a win here. Stefan, what do you think?
What do I think? I think trying to predict what Dortmund are going to do is clearly become a fool's errand, and it's impossible to predict what we're going to get from Dortmund. I still think fundamentally that defense causes them so many issues. I think Terzic will set up defensively to try and kind of smash and grab result, if you will. I think it'll be a very tight match. I really do. I think there's a big difference between them playing Milan in the Champions League and them playing Gladbach at home, who they're expected to throw everything at from the first whistle. So I think they're probably better set up for this match in a weird way. So I think they could get a result. Yeah, I do. Bizarrely enough.
I think Dortmund win. I think Milan are way below what they were when they won the title. They're not as convincing. I think we talked about Leao. Well, Leao's a good example of someone that's kind of fallen off his level a little bit, I would say. It completely contrary to everything we've said over the past 25 minutes. I just think Dortmund are better. And that's not a comment about Italian versus German football. Don't come after me, Serie A ultras on Twitter, please. But genuinely, I just think they have better players. They'll be stronger. It's in Germany. And nothing I've seen from Milan so far this season suggests that they're headed for, you know, the latter stages of the Champions League. So I think this will be... I think the harder tasks have been passed. I think Dortmund...
Just to correct you, Sepp, it's in Italy.
It's in Italy?
Yeah, yeah.
Did I imagine... You know what I'm thinking?
Germany
I'm
game
thinking
was
Newcastle.
1-1.
Yeah, yes, you're right. Well, listen, I've lost all credibility in this part of the conversation, so I'm just going to stay quiet now.
I actually think it suits them better that the game is in Italy. Because I think they fundamentally play, they stick to their Tessage's rules better when they don't play at home.
That's true. Yeah. They did it at St. James's Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually talked about that, I think, a few times after the Champions League shows where you get a lot of that where big teams who actually want to play defensively can't really do that in front of their own crowds because their fans also demand attacking football.
That's a great point. I think there's
probably a case of that at Dortmund as well, which is in itself a problem, especially whenever they come up against Bayern or anyone half decent in the Champions League. So, yeah, just going to have to wait and see what happens, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, guys, before we go, Sepp, how was Frank Schmidt? how was hanging out with Frank Schmidt? Because you got to spend some time with the Heidenheim head coach. I don't think your piece is out yet, right? Because we had people ask after the last time you were on. But how was it? And when is your piece out?
No, it's out now. It came out on Thanksgiving Day. So,
okay.
I fear that was the graveyard. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That. So it is out. I'll send it to you guys in the WhatsApp. But Frank Schmidt was a delight to spend time with. He was certainly among the most authentic people I've met in football. And completely unaffected. I think the best way to kind of sum it up was I spent a couple of hours with him, and by the time I left, I had no trouble understanding why it is that players play the way they do for him. He's one of those, he's got a lot of social skills. He's a very human person, and he's very likable. And I think one of the things I dislike a little bit about modern football is this idea of coaches as high priests, right? Like they have to stand for something, and they take themselves incredibly seriously, and they have kind of, they don't have that sort of capacity for being self-deprecating. Frank Schmidt is almost completely the other way. Like he wants, like I tried to bring up his coaching record as, you know, becoming the longest serving head coach in German football history. He was having none of it at all. Like he just, you know, wasn't interested in that. Really, really doesn't talk about himself a lot. Talks about the we at Heidenheim. Talks about all the people that have been there since he arrived as a player first in 2003, and then a coach. But I just really enjoyed spending time with him, and I hope what I wrote did him justice, because he's a great man of German football, and you know, I believe that more now having met him. So yeah, it was a real privilege.
Does it feel like a one-man club, Serb, when you go to Heidenheim? Do you feel like everyone's kind of taking the lead off him?
Not really, because I met a couple of people there who so obviously buy into clearly what Frank Schmidt is doing with the team, but also what the club stands for. So obviously Heidenheim are in a pretty tricky catchment area, because 2 hours from Munich, hour and a half from Stuttgart, two massive cities, two very, very big football clubs. And in response, they offer something slightly different. They're a little bit more earthy. They're more tangible, even to the extent that if you have a look around their stadium, the Voigt Arena, you know, even sort of the quote unquote corporate areas are very accessible. They're for people to go to, not like, you know, if you were to go to the Premier League and it's, you know, a place for millionaires to spend 20 grand a Saturday. And the people you talk to they just really love the club, and Frank Schmidt has come to define the club in football terms. But it feels like, you know, for instance, like the CEO has been there since 1995, I think, 96, 95. They got a goalkeeping coach that's been there since the mid-80s. Their sports manager played with Frank Schmidt, you know, in the Regional Liga back in 2003. Like, so my point being is that it's a great story on a lot of levels, and Frank Schmidt is kind of the first person to point to all the other people who have contributed to it, and sort of direct your attention away from him towards them. And it's you can't help but root for them, given where they've come from, all they've achieved. And one of the things that I got to see was he showed me the video of from inside the coach when they arrived back in Heidenheim on the night they won promotion. So they drove back from Regensburg, and there were 6,500 people in the car park waiting for them, and it was like gone midnight, so there's just all these sort of red flares, and you know, and it was, you know, Frank had his phone out, and you could hear all the players celebrating and dancing around him, and you could see how much it meant to him. And yeah, it was a lovely experience. It's certainly amongst my best journalistically since I got here. And yeah, they're a great story, and they deserve all the credit in the world.
Yeah. Well, people should go read it. So it is out, as you said. Maybe Stefan, we can maybe link to it as well on the show notes. And give it a read, because Sepp is a good writer. Need to add that as well.
Yeah, Sepp's fine. Yeah.
Sepp is a good writer. He just doesn't like to admit it.
Manu, make sure you remind him which website to go to. That is D-Athletic or Das Athletic.
D-Athletic or Das Athletic or Der Athletic. Well, it is Der Athlet, which is the German word for athletic. But yeah. Athleticism, athletic, or whatever.
But no, I'm going to look it up. Just don't.
Athleticism.
Just don't.
I don't know.
Like, I think Sepp might be right. I think it's Das Athletic. But yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening, everyone. As always, this show is brought to you by Bet Online. Check out Sepp's piece. Check out the Substack. The Monday Bulletin is out. Obviously, Stefan and I both are going to have our individual pieces out too, the bonus shows. Transfer show coming still, and then of course we have Champions League week, so Champions League recap later this week, and then yeah, both Stefan and I will be in Germany next week. I'm planning to go to the Bayern game on Saturday, so there will be something from that. So yeah, until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
In Sicht.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.